Hello，大家好，欢迎收听本期的中国生物制药热点话题直播间。我是主持人 Brian 杨，SideLine 中国主编。今天由我和 Dexter 严以及特邀嘉宾 SideLine 在英国的编辑 Andrew 一起为大家带来两个话题的讨论。首先，第一个话题，是最近刚刚在圣地亚哥召开的 AACR 年会。每年的 AACR 年会都是抗肿瘤药企争相发布最新的临床数据的场所和机会。在本次年会上，中国公司又带来哪些热点呢？Dexter 最近写了 AACR 的报道。我请他为大家做一个分享。第二个话题是来自欧洲的分享。SideLine 在英国的 Andrew 将分享欧洲药企对于最近美国国会提出的 BioSecure 法案有哪些看法，而且最近两个收购的交易也引起了大家的广泛关注，比如Profound Bio 和 Genmab，还有 AnHeart 和 Nuvation。在中国药企和欧洲药企不断的做交易的同时，欧洲药企对于中国药企的创新，以及和中国药企做交易有哪些 insights，安主将和我们一起分享。最后呢，他还会讲一下柏林格最近业绩分享会上有哪些和中国 Sinopharm 达成的三个肿瘤交易的三个 deals，这一些看法。下面呢，我请 Dexter 和 Andrew 给大家打个招呼，Please say quick hi。
Hello everybody，我是严杰，Dexter 严。
Hi everybody, Andrew here. Glad to join you on the platform.
谢谢。那么我们就直入主题吧，Dexter，我知道你最近呢，在对于中美国癌症研究协会 AACR 的年会有一篇专门的报道，能否跟我们讲一下中国公司在这次年会上有哪些亮点？
好的，谢谢 Brian。我们都知道，最近今年的那个美国癌症研究协会年会，AACR 年会，在今年的这个月的上2周已经举办过了嘛。从中国参会企业的一些情况来看，基本上是大家印象最深的，我记得我们以前也聊过的，就是中国双抗 ADC。双特异性 ADC 的，特别是此种双特异性 ADC 的那个，研发的一个临床前的一些进展，基本上都是一些临床前的一些项目，都是已经呈现了百花齐放。我们之前也简单的聊过。那除了这个，ADC，甚至包括双特异性 ADC 的之外呢，其实中国药企，特别是我们从那个本次大会的 Late Breaking Research。也就是那个重磅研究的那个范围来说呢，也是有很多那个值得关注的。就我们可以简单来说吧，像海河医药，就上海的海河药业，对吧？它在那个 SOS 抗体抑制剂，以及在那个 PARP1 抑制剂上面都有一些很出色的一些临床前的研究，因此入选了本次的那个Late Breaking Session。当然除此之外呢，我们还可以看到像药界安康，它有一个FGFR 的泛 FGFR 抑制剂的一些临床研究啊。应该是一些一期的临床研究，在本次 AAC 大会上也有一些公开的一些数据。因此也入选了那个本次的 Late Breaking Session。可以总的来说呢，就是从各个研究来说呢，大家都希望把自己最好的临床前研究放到这一次 AACR 大会上面，
谢谢 Dexter。其实正像你说的，其实中国公司选择在 AACR 上发布关键临床试验结果，其中呢有一些可能特别值得一提的地方，比如说抗方生物吧，这个它的卡度尼利单抗，对双特异抗体的这个三期临床试验结果，而且还有中国生物制药下属的这个正大天晴。还有这个异方生物合作，就是和异方生物合作的这个叫小分子的这个 Gasorelin 这个 D153 这个二期临床试验结果，能否就这两个跟我们大家分享一下？
好的，好的。是这样的，就是虽然传统上 AACR 大会大家都关注一些临床前的一些成果，就像我刚才前面提到的，但是本次大会上我们也欣喜的看到，现在来自康方生物它在大会上公布了一个关键三期的临床数据结果，也就是康方生物的卡度尼利单抗，它的双靶点，而且双那个免疫检查点的靶点，分别是 PD-1 和那个CTLA4， 我们可以看到这是一个三期临床试验。首先我们必须提醒大家，它是一个纯中国的人群的一个临床试验。虽然我们可以说就是在那个晚期胃癌方面嘛，对吧，晚期胃癌方面其实目前像国际上像那个 K 药欧药都已经获批了，在一线治疗那个晚期胃腺癌。那像康方生物呢，和他们不同的是只做了一个中国的一个临床。我们可以从那个康方生物的这个名为Compassion 15的临床试验设计来看呢，它比较有意思呢，就是它特别突出了那个想要突出一个 PD-L1 低表达的一个人群中，它进行了一番探索。也就是说呢，在之前的 K 药和 O 药呢，都相对来说没有特别强调在一个PD-L1 低表达的人群中做这么一个探索。那从结果上来看呢，康方生物的卡度尼利单抗也可以说呢，就是做出了一定的成果。怎么说呢？就是我们可以说具体来说呢，就是康方生物它。这个卡度尼利单抗，它一共入组了，一共入组了六百十人，其中它那个subgroup， 也就是PDL1 低表达这个组呢，它显示出来的那个，以那个主要终点就是中位总生存期，就 median overall survival， 延长了3.7个月，也就是针对那个安慰剂组，当然安慰剂组也是加了那个化疗的，针对安慰剂组，延长了3.7个月，hazard ratio 大概是0.7啊 ，hazard ratio 是0.7，也就是说把那个死亡风险降低了30%，但是我们可以特别关注到 P 值呢，就是大概只有0.011。P 值是0.011，可以说是还是可以合格，但是我们也要注意到呢，它这个 Compassion 15这个三期临床呢，它目前公布的结果是一个中期结果，它这次只是公布了一个中期结果，所以呢我们还未来还可以继续观察，也许康方生物它会给我们释放出更多的那个关于这个 PDLED 表达这个组的一个更新的一个结果。当然我们可以说总的来说呢，这个临床 Compassion 15的临床是成功的，它不仅探索了PDLE 低表达人群，它也那个探索了 PDLE 的那个高表达人群嘛。那总的来说呢，就是所有人群的，也就是intent for treatment 的这个人群呢，它的那个中位总生存期呢，其实是还是提高了提高了4.2个月，也就是说他那个治疗组比那个对照组提高了4.2个月，也就是把那个死亡风险是降低了38%，P 值是小于0.001，对，那个对 Brian 那个你说我们可以再谈一下那个康 另外一个三期，另外一个 sorry， 另外一个关键二期临床，另外关键二期临床是一方生物的它那个 KRAS G12C 抑制剂，我们可以知道那个在前两年呢，美国它那个像那个安静和那个 Mirati 啊，当然 Mirati 后来被那个 BMS 已经收购了。那这两家他们的那个KRAS G12C G12C 抑制剂呢，都已经成功获批了，然后用于那个治疗三线的 KRAS 那个 KRAS 突变的那个非小细胞肺癌嘛啊。但是呢，我们可以看到那个从中国一方生物和正大和那个中国生物合作的这款关键二期的这个结果来看呢，也是不错。我们大概讲一下它那个，因为它主要终点是那个 ORR 嘛。它的那个 ORR 是客观缓解率是 50%， 中位缓解的持续时间是 12.8 个月。当然可以说呢，它这个也是一个还没有，也是一个中期的一个数据，和安静的那个sotorasib 和那个 mirati 的那个adagrasib 相比呢，其实在 ORR 上和那个中位缓解持续时间上都有自己的一定的优势啊。当然我们还得强调，这也是一个中国的临床。
谢谢 Dexter。正像你说的那样，其实 Akaso 的这个康方的这个 PD-1 和 CTLA-4，它是卡度尼利单抗，它是也是中国首个 global approval。就是中国全球第一个那个获批吧，所以他可以说出这个，可以看得出这个 PD-1 和这个领域上这个中国这个药企的创新能力还是非常可观的啊。当时也感谢你分享那个一方生物和这个中国生物制药这个关键二期的临床试验结果。Thanks, Dexter。那谢谢。下面呢，我们请安主来分享一下他作为一个从英国的这个角度来分享一下这个 perspective。Andrew, first I would like to ask you how European companies how do they feel about the US Congress recent legislation about a BioSecure Act?What have you heard so far?
Yeah, it's a really great question, Brian. I think, your initial reaction would be to say that the European companies are bystanders in this. Obviously, there's some tensions growing here between China and the US, but I think if you dig a little deeper, there's more to it than that. I mean, just to recap, what the BioSecure Act may or may not be, it's about fears about foreign adversary biotech companies of which are against US national security concern. And as you know, you've been covering this, but these allegations were made by the US House Select Committee on the Strategic Competition between the US and the Chinese Communist Party. And they named a number of companies who they allege were basically passing genetic data from Americans, taking them from America and then passing on to the Chinese government. Which, pretty inflammatory stuff. But the chairman of that committee, Mike Gallagher, said they named Beijing Genomics Institute as one company, and they said they would pass these details on to the Chinese government, and undoubtedly using the genetic data to further its malign aggression, potentially even to develop a bioweapon used to target the American people. So that's pretty, as I say, that's pretty inflammatory stuff. And so there's a lot going on there on the potentially political level. And nobody quite knows where it's going to end up. But if you looked at into some of the details about what it may or may not cover, the BioSecure Act, it's suggesting that it would prohibit US executive agencies from contracting with or extending loans or grants to any company with current or future commercial arrangements with a biotechnology company of concern. So if you try and read that through to any global company, including European, that could mean that a European company is trying to get some money from a US government agency and gets screened out because of its association with one of these companies of concern. And if I try and think, speculate for a moment what scenario that would include, I think that it really could have implications for European companies. Certainly, if you think over the last couple of decades, there's a lot of UK, European companies that have got US contracts. So, for instance, with BARDA, they would give a lot of European vaccine companies contracts. And over in the last decade or so, those have been quite big lifelines for some of these European companies. So if that Biosecure Act were to come in, and if it were to be enforced to its utmost limit and quite strictly, you could see that, you know, that would prohibit those companies from getting those contracts just for having an association with one of these companies. So that's a bit alarming. I think we'll wait and see really how, whether or not that goes through to that extent, and you know, whether it would, European companies would suffer from it. I think on the other hand, it's quite clear that, you know, if you're looking at WuXi AppTec and WuXi Biologics, where the other two companies got hit pretty hard by the news. So if you're looking at CDMOs and CROs, you know, I suppose some of the European and US companies would be looking to seeing if there's some advantage if those companies get shut out, if their Chinese competitors get shut out, are they going to benefit from it? So we'll wait and see. I think there's been some pushback on the bill though already, because you know, as we all know, reporting on the field, a lot of these companies aren't really interested in where you're headquartered. They're interested in your technology, how good your science is, and you know, if the price is right, they want to do a deal. So anything that stands in that way is not necessarily good news for the US pharma biotech scene. So I think that message will filter through to Capitol Hill. But you know, it's a political matter, so sometimes these things run away with themselves. But we'll see. You know, it's going to take a little while to wash out.
Yeah. So Andrew, I think you rightly pointed to a lot of background information out there, and particularly in terms of the perspectives from European companies' point of view. Again, as you know, WuXi Biotech has WuXi AppTec has invested in both Ireland and also in Germany, building manufacturing sites. And also, we cannot forget that this year is also election year in the U.S., which also makes a bit more complex to already.
Actually, one other further little anecdote I can tell you about from my own personal experience. I was speaking to an individual at a big US pharma company recently and involved in deal making. And in the conversation, they made it very clear that they couldn't talk directly about Chinese companies at all in a public forum. This was in relation to, you know, how it affects their deal making. And that person said they could only talk publicly about companies from emerging markets. So really just to, you know, not be specific about it in a Chinese way. I was going to say I was quite surprised by that. But, you know, on reflection, it seems like a pretty clear response from at least some big pharma companies, particularly US ones, I suspect, about that political and trade sensitivity around this whole subject brought up by Biosecure. So, you know, they're treading carefully. But I still think it's the case that they're going to be looking for deals wherever they can find them, and they don't want any new laws getting in the way if they can possibly help it.
Speaking of deals, recently there are two acquisitions. One is from Anhart with Novation, and another is Profound with Genmab. So I know you covered Genmab before, and you also interviewed the Novation. How this European companies looking at deal making with Chinese biotech companies? What are some you know, like a key insights you can offer us?
Yeah, well, on this one specifically, on Genmab. Genmab's quite an interesting company because they've been around they're celebrating their 25th anniversary this year, and you know, European companies just haven't had the same trajectory as the US ones in terms of success bringing drugs to market themselves. Genmab took a different approach, and at some point in its history decided it wasn't going to be a fully integrated company and concentrated on the discovery of novel antibodies. So it's done that to with great success. I mean, the biggest one, of course, is Darzalex, the multiple myeloma antibody, and that's been a massive hit for them and J&J. I think it just be, this week J&J announced that it was, you know, it's their biggest seller now. So that's really funding Genmab's you know, coffers, and they've just really pivoted in the last year or two to decide that they're going to become that fully integrated company. I think that basically the history there is they got stung by some trying to invest in manufacturing base, and they decided right they wouldn't go into it. But now that, you know, things have changed, and so they're looking outwards. And so that, a part of that deal, they're going to commercialize some of the drugs themselves, but also they want to expand in a traditional big pharma way and to make an acquisition. And so Profound Bio was there. And as many of us know, they're an antibody drug conjugate company. So what's interesting about Profound is they were a spin-out from Seagen. And so Seagen are one of the original companies in the ADC field, and they just got bought out by Pfizer, of course, last year. So one of the, I think it was the biggest deal last year. So that's the background to that. And so that's going to complement Genmab's antibody pipeline with the ADCs. And they've got a particular secret sauce. It's the linker. That's the thing that really attracted Genmab to Profound Bio. So we'll see how that develops as well. It's quite early stage. I mean, it shows how ADCs are hotting up, really, because they in other fields they wouldn't go quite so early. It seems to me it looks a little bit like how immuno oncology went with PD-1, PD-L1s, where everybody piled in to try and not miss the boat. So we'll see on that. I did see. And in terms of, you know, the Chinese aspect of it, it does seem that UBS investment bank said Chinese companies have a big part of the ADC pipeline. Is it this estimates about 42%, I think, probably by sheer numbers of molecules and assets. So that's going to be a big aspect of it as well, where global companies are going to be hunting in with Chinese companies.
Yeah, just quickly, Andrew, you talked quite a bit about this deal. Genmab obviously sitting on a lot of cash, and just like BioNTech, another European biotech, they're also actively looking for deals. For example, BioNTech already did with another ADC developer, Duality Bio, last year. So again, this looks like they are really looking at sourcing innovation from China. When we look at this deal making, we cannot forget a big pharma, traditional, really strong player in terms of the deal making thing. Recently, Boehringer Ingelheim announced a collaboration with Sino Biopharm for their three oncology assets. I know you recently covered the quarterly call for Boehringer. What have they said about this deal, or what is German biotech, big pharma, biopharma looking for in terms of this the oncology the collaboration?
Yeah. The Boehringer, an interesting company. And as I reported this week, the headline really was the fact that Boehringer overtook Bayer as Germany's biggest company, which is partly a symptom of Bayer's troubles, actually, right, as much as Boehringer's success. But Boehringer's success has been driven by their cardiometabolic blockbuster Jardiance, which really grew. I think it grew about 30% last year in sales, which is, you know, like a rocket, really, in terms of how it grew, based on the chronic kidney disease new indication. That was what really was fueling it, I believe. But they are quite aware that Jardiance isn't going to be hanging around forever. And in fact, in terms of coming back to the theme of, you know, the US regulatory environment, one of the things they've got on their plate is the US Inflation Reduction Act. So Jardiance is one of the 10 drugs that's going to be up for price controls with the US government. And, you know, companies in China know all about price controls, but the US Inflation Reduction Act is going to bring that in as well. And so that announcements coming in September, incidentally. So there we're going to see, could be a big hit on Jardiance. So therefore, Boehringer will know quite well that they've got to have an inflection and look at oncology. So that's really what the Sino deal is symptomatic of. They've invested an awful lot of their money in their pipeline. So the point about Boehringer is that they're a private company, so they can allocate their capital in ways that public companies don't. So they increased their R&D spending by about 14% last year, and so that's up to 22% as a portion of their sales, which is really much higher than a lot of the big pharma companies. But we're yet to see that playing out in terms of actual success in the pipeline in terms of oncology. So we'll see about that. They've got survodutide, which is their candidate in GLP-1 receptor agonists. That's their biggest hope, but it's not in oncology. So they're really looking to break into oncology as well. The Sino deal, I think that's just them laying the groundwork for access to the China market. Certainly, obviously, big cancer market, and they've got two phase three drugs in the pipeline and a second phase two one. So they're just laying the groundwork there. So that's obviously a big part of their plan to get to China. So beyond that, we'll see. But they're going to have to differentiate that pipeline if they're going to get success in any market, because, you know, you name it, lung cancer, bispecifics, there's an awful lot of competition out there. So the returns on investment could be pretty low if you're not best in class.
Indeed, like what you said, not only one keyword I can summarize from both you and Dexter is really people are looking at the oncology space and looking at China for innovation and also for market commercialization. I think this is going to be the topic for the going on for some time, and we look forward to hear more from both of you.这期呢到讨论呢就到此为止，我们也感谢那个特邀嘉宾兰分享，Andrew来分享的看法，也感谢Dexter跟我们带来AACR的精彩这个内容，更重要的呢，我们的往期节目和本期节目都会在各大的播客平台和喜马拉雅上可以重复收听，也欢迎给我们留言分享你的看法和建议。如果你有这个往以后的特邀嘉宾的主意的话，也欢迎跟我们来函的建议。这次呢China Biotech Podcast 中国生物制药热点话题直播间的节目就到此为止。感谢大家收听，再见。
拜拜。
拜拜。